Welcome to another StanLib Asset Management podcast. My name is Dave Watson and I'm one of the investment specialists at StanLib. Today I'm chatting to Amit Palmer. Amit is one of the investment specialists at JP Morgan. Today we're going to be chatting about the Global Select strategy. As many of you will know, this is a fund which we have launched and offer into the South African market as part of our relationship with JP Morgan. And today we're specifically going to be reflecting on the second quarter of 2025. At this stage, there's been so many words thrown around in terms of, you know, how do we describe the second quarter? But really, it comes down to being a very noisy market, very volatile, largely sentiment driven, and quite a difficult market for investors to navigate with lots of news flow to digest. So really looking forward to unpacking that more with Amit today.
Thanks very much, Dave. And as always, it's an absolute pleasure to be speaking with you and to investors, to clients, to people in South Africa, and bringing the StanLib Global Select strategy to life for you. So, yeah, much to your point, every quarter we're having these updates and every quarter we're speaking, it feels like we're almost digesting so much news flow over the course of 3 months that would be sufficient for a, you know, 1 to 2 year period. And at the end of the first quarter of the year, let's just take a step back and think where we finished that off. So we had the now new US administration introducing their first bits of new trade policy, which was really driven in a very protectionist stance with impending tariffs, which were being applied worldwide in a very blanket way. You also saw at the end of that first quarter, really the first time we'd seen cracks in terms of that AI thesis, the winners of the last couple of years, which were really AI beneficiaries, thinking of Mag7, thinking of overall the semiconductor sector, a crack slightly after the news about DeepSeek. And as a reminder, just for anyone who's not familiar, DeepSeek was a Chinese large language model, which was produced at a fraction of the cost overall that some of the US models were being delivered at. So there was question marks there. And also much more attention turning towards some softer economic data, what earnings would be saying. And so digesting all of that information as we came through the second quarter, I would characterize it as we've still seen a very strong sentiment-driven market across the last 3 months. And momentum has been incredibly relentless in terms of that market performance. And what do we mean by momentum? It's been a market where investors have really focused on shorter term revisions to numbers and earnings upgrades and what results have really been delivered at the corporate level. And stock prices have moved quite considerably just on the basis of that shorter term sentiment. Now, we as longer term stock pickers, we have not got a strategy which is necessarily built for that kind of environment. We focus on what we believe a company will reward us for over the course of a 3 to 5 year time horizon. And so that's part of the reason. And to be upfront about it, the portfolio didn't perform as well over this time period. And we can touch on that a bit later. But the second quarter, again, continuation of some of those trade tensions. Liberation Day came along on the 2nd of April. You saw very strong market reaction there, particularly those sectors which are much more defensive in nature. They performed very well on Liberation Day. But as soon as you saw the first signs of, and the acronym that's now been coined, TUCO, Trump always chickens out, the TUCO trade really coming across and the US administration softening some of their negative rhetoric around trade, you then saw a real rally in lower quality sectors and names across that month of April. And then following that, going into May and June, you started to see more of a normalization of that backdrop. Our investment process performed a bit better over those periods, but the month of April in particular, with that incredibly strong rally in lower quality names, was a period where we didn't perform as well. That was driven by lower quality cyclicals. And we've started to relocate our process. Our valuation signal has started pointing us in the right direction over then the subsequent 2 months, and indeed on more of a month-to-date basis here in July. So yes, it was very, very difficult again for a stock picker. But again, we are very much in a man-made market. That's how I would characterize it, shaped increasingly so by political rhetoric.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a key point there. I mean, if you any fundamentally grounded strategy or process is going to struggle in an environment where You can't tie back the performance you're seeing in markets to those fundamentals. So, I mean, really, if you go back and we've chatted about this in previous engagements, really, that since the fourth quarter of last year, we have had that momentum you referenced, that sentiment-driven market playing out. And I suppose in an environment, we would say we would actually be pretty understanding of the fact that a strategy like Global Select would have a more challenged period over that time. I mean, Amit, one of the other key things I think of what people are chatting about at the moment is obviously valuations. You know, at index levels, a lot of markets looking quite expensive, particularly US equities coming into the limelight there. I mean, maybe just from your perspective, valuation is an important part of the Global Select process. And if we think about, maybe you can give us some examples, particularly in that tech space, to say, are there still some of those names you guys are optimistic on, despite maybe our level seeming quite expensive stocks?
Yeah, and let's just rewind for a second. So in terms of how valuation is really our guiding principle and our North Star in the strategy, we, of course, leverage the insights of 80 analysts we have located around the world, all of them dedicated to their sector and divided up by country. Divided up by region. So with all of that bottom-up insight that we're getting, the overall message from all of our analysts as we translate that into looking at valuation, all of their estimates from around the world, what we've found is that we believe that there's a widening of that valuation spread. And what we effectively, I'll translate that into what it really means, it's the opportunities between the most expensive stocks and the cheapest stocks has actually broadened out and it's widened over the course of this quarter. And that presents a real opportunity for a stock picker and for stock pickers such as ourselves. Now, why has that happened? There are certain pockets of the market which have performed incredibly well over the course of the last couple of years. And just using the US technology sector, for example, you actually saw a sell-off in many of those names over that first quarter of this year. Now, the commonly held view is very much, well, many of these companies are incredibly expensive and they're going to pull back much more materially. If you look back at history and if you look back at financial history, there's been other periods with incredibly concentrated rallies in the market. And I'm speaking here about Mag 7, Mag 6, whatever the acronym you want to use. But what I would say is in those previous periods where we've had very concentrated markets, the fundamentals supporting those names haven't necessarily been there. And what's very unique, Dave, about this current backdrop that we're in is the fundamentals, the cash flow generation, and the competitive position of many of those US large mega cap names within the technology sector still remains incredibly strong. And when we're just looking at, and this is why earnings season, we're so sensitive to that at the moment and why we've been following it very closely, which companies are beating and which companies aren't beating, you're still seeing actually at the broad based, many companies beating in terms of their estimates. And focusing on a couple of examples there, we've just had Meta come out, we've just had Microsoft come out, both of them delivered incredibly strong earnings. But you saw more mixed earnings coming out of the likes of Alphabet, for example, coming out of the likes of Tesla. And so I go back to my earlier points. We need to be mindful and watchful and forward thinking about the valuation and the multiple we're applying to these companies. But that drives selectivity within overall stock selection. So it doesn't necessarily pay just to keep holding the index overall. There's much more dispersion there between those winners and losers. And you've seen both Meta and Microsoft do incredibly well. And you saw a much more muted response in terms of Alphabet and Tesla overall. And so that's really the message I would want to leave you with. And then the second point there, actually, just perhaps going on a slight tangent, is also you've seen other parts of the world also participating in this rally a bit more as well. So European markets have been one of the best performers on a year-to-date basis. You've seen that rally coming through in terms of industrials, in terms of defense names, in terms of the banks as well. And so we're very encouraged by that overall from a global stock selection perspective. You've seen emerging markets participating a bit more in some pockets of that as well. You've seen Japan also performing better this year too. And so when you combine all of that, we're finding plenty of opportunities worldwide. And the message I would want to leave with you here is on a valuation basis, if you have that bottom-up capability, there's always areas of the market which are then looking undervalued, and just being able to cast that lens over the entire market is incredibly powerful for us.
Yeah, thanks for those insights, Amos. And I think an important one, you said, there's, you know, if you look at an index level, probably not prudent to sit and just hold a potentially an index tracker fund. You actually need to be thinking at the moment in terms of which of these counters are the valuations being justified by the fundamentals. Are we seeing the earnings coming through to justify where the valuations are at this stage? Amit, I guess maybe a bit of an unfair question, but I suppose a topic we can't get away from at the moment, which is still to a large degree quite fluid, would be around the tariffs and the tariff announcements and exactly where they land. But I suppose at a principle level, how are you guys applying your mind to how this ultimately impacts margins on certain businesses? I mean, are there concerns within the team? Just in terms of how you guys are thinking about that, how much of these tariffs potentially get absorbed by companies versus passed through to consumers? Obviously, that could have a material impact on the profitability of some of these businesses.
Yeah, and the tariff discussion is one which, again, we continue to actively have. And I think we're going to be having these discussions around US policy on a go-forward basis for a while now. On tariffs specifically, again, I point back towards having that broad research platform that we do and having individuals being able to go out there and say to companies, well, how are you actually looking to manage your supply chains on a go-forward basis? You know, using Volvo as an example, they're a very global business, the electric trucking business that they've got, but they've got US manufacturing capabilities. That's going to be handled very differently in terms of the overall impact that tariffs have on them with those US manufacturing capabilities compared to some of the European beverage makers, for example. So the likes of Heineken, Carlsberg, Pernod Ricard, we're having very different discussions with than, say, a Volvo, who has that manufacturing capability. And so we need to go quite granular on a sector by sector or a stock by stock basis in terms of looking at that impact. Our base case, though, and we try and be as conservative as possible with this, is assume a 10% tariff worldwide, which probably isn't going to go away, and apply a more strict measure on, say, China, for example, and assume perhaps a 25% tariff there as your base case. And that's really the playbook that we're working off of, is look back at Trump term one, go out and meet with and speak with companies and try and understand and unpick some of the messaging there. And really, over the course of that first quarter, and this is why earnings season now coming into the second quarter is so important, is now companies have had time to digest what some of this trade rhetoric has really been. They're able to respond to it accordingly with the, not necessarily more visibility, but if they are more uncertain about their CapEx plans, if they are more uncertain about their hiring plans or developing projects going forward, at least they can articulate that more rather than the wait and see approach we had at the end of 2024 and coming into 2025. And by all accounts, it's an environment which is more uncertain for corporates, and they're having to navigate that as best as they can. So again, I would really point towards our bottom-up research capabilities there, and also using history as some sort of indication in terms of what can be achieved.
Yeah, thanks, Amit. I think it's really just good to get an insight into, like I say, no one really knows exactly how this plays out, but just in terms of how the team are applying their minds to what is a very topical point at the moment. Amit, I guess as we start to maybe close out on this podcast, we can spend a lot more time chatting about the second quarter in particular, but I think equally important is for us, and you've touched on some of it, but maybe to wrap it up into a forward-looking view, the outlook, areas that the team are optimistic about, potential risks that are being flagged, really just more of a forward-looking view, some of the key positions in the portfolio. I think if you could touch on that, it would be great.
Yeah, for sure. And we've done podcasts now, and I've spoken to the market on a number of occasions. And if we think back to really at the end of 2024, we had quite meaningful overweights and really two tilts in the portfolio. We were very overweight defensive names, which held up very well in that first quarter when times were much more volatile and uncertain. The term which Dave and I used to describe them and what's been coined by the market is those bunker stocks, or the bunker seven stocks was what was described there. Those performed much better at the start of the year. And we were also, again, going back to the start of the year, we were also leaning into those AI beneficiaries, the semiconductor sector, those higher growth names, which are a bit more cyclical in nature. Now, the picture over the course of this year and how we've positioned ourselves for the future was we had to recognize that that defensive positioning wasn't enough to offset other parts of the portfolio where some of the more cyclical sectors actually performed very, very well. April being a good example of that, and last December being a good example of that. So we've balanced the positions in the portfolio a bit more for this more uncertain environment. We don't want to be too underweight some of those cyclicals. We don't want to be too overweight some of the defensives. We want to ensure we've got a very balanced portfolio going forward. What we took the opportunity to do earlier this year in our sites, a few areas we added and areas where we've actually taken some profits on, we added to some of that high growth exposure. So the technology sector, the media sector, the semiconductor sector, that was a place we added to after that sell-off that we saw in the first quarter of this year. And some of the names where we really added to them, and this was driven by valuation, and we viewed them very much as almost being on a standard deviation level. They'd moved quite meaningfully from their mean. We added to names like TSMC. We added to Apple in the portfolio as well at the margins. We initiated a new position in Walt Disney. And across the board there, it was really driven by that valuation opportunity that emerged in that first quarter. Elsewhere where we added to them was really in some of those more cyclically facing sectors. So in the industrial space, and these are much higher quality businesses that we're trying to get exposure to, names like Eaton, the power management company, names like Trane Technologies, the heating and ventilation company. They're a leader in that space there in terms of R&D, their development and innovation in new technologies. And in terms of the aerospace and engineering sector, which has benefited from the increased interest in the defense sector, but much more in terms of just a broader rally in cyclicals, is Howmet Aerospace as well. And all three of those companies have done much better over the course of this year. And we initiated those positions in them to get a bit more risk in the portfolio, to get a bit more sensitivity to that cyclicality on a go-forward basis. And we also added to some of the banks exposure too, again, focusing on some of that more cyclical exposure there as well. We liked the US banks already. So Bank of America, Wells Fargo were some of our top picks, which performed very well post-Trump. And we viewed them as benefiting from both the deregulation story that came along in the fourth quarter and potential removal of the asset cap. But we also started initiating new positions more internationally. So UniCredit went into the portfolio, one of the best European banks in the market. They've had an incredibly strong run. And we also initiated a position in Mitsubishi UFJ Financial Group. So for the first time, actually having some exposure to Japanese financials there as well. And on the other side of the ledger, I mentioned already, the defensives in the portfolio performed very well at the start of the year. We took profits on many of those names. A couple of examples there being Deutsche Börse, MasterCard, Munich Re, all of them held up very, very well in that uncertain first quarter environment. From a valuation standpoint, they were looking more expensive. We followed that valuation signal and we've taken profits on them and added to all of those areas I just mentioned. Other names where we actually took profits on were also some of the more defensive industrial names as well. Otis, the manufacturer of elevators and lifts, being one of those key names, and also Vertex as well, another name where we've taken some money off the table there because we just viewed there being better opportunities elsewhere. So it's been a very busy year in terms of just allocating in the portfolio, thinking about positioning very carefully. But I would characterize it on a go-forward basis right now. We're cautious about the future, and that's why we've underscored it with a much more balanced portfolio to reflect that without taking any sort of strong macroeconomic tilt within the portfolio.
Thanks very much, Emmett. And I think it's also important to remind ourselves, I mean, when we're doing podcasts that are focusing on any particular quarter, it's a really short time frame to be thinking about a global equity solution. But when we do take a step back and we think about this global select strategy, I mean, it's been delivering excellent returns for clients over multiple decades. And I think it's just important to remind ourselves that, yes, perhaps a challenging couple of quarters, not just for yourselves, but for, as I mentioned at the beginning, any fundamentally grounded process. But certainly sounds like as we headed towards the end of the second quarter, some of that process starting to be rewarded again, and no one knows how things play out from here, but it's certainly encouraging to hear how active the team have been in terms of applying their mind to this environment. I think, Amit, unless there's any closing comments your side, we can probably wrap the podcast up there.
No, for sure. As always, it's a pleasure to speak with you, Dave, and look forward to seeing you in a couple of months.
Thanks, Amit, and thank you to all of our interested parties and listeners today. If you would like to chat more about the Global Select strategy, please reach out to myself or your StanLib representative. We're always very eager to engage further on any of our propositions. But thank you very much for taking the time, and we'll chat again soon.
StanLib is an authorized financial services provider in terms of the FASE Act and a registered representative manager in terms of Cisco. JP Morgan Asset Management UK Limited is an offshore strategic partner to StanLib Asset Management and is authorized and regulated by the UK's Financial Conduct Authority.